It's Wednesday, Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin is with us here in Studio 3A. Last week, Mitt Romney addressed the Republican convention and tried to convince voters he's the best choice to lead the country. Tomorrow evening, President Obama speaks to his party's convention in Charlotte and makes his case for another 4 years. What do you want to hear from President Obama tomorrow? We're going to give you a new phone number. We're having difficulty with our system, so write it down. 202-513-2343. Again, that number, 202-513-2343. Email system still works, TOTN@NPR.org. Excuse me, email is talk@NPR.org. That's an ancient email address. I apologize for that. Again, this week, we've invited former presidential speechwriters Paul Glastris and Peter Robinson to join us. Paul Glastris wrote speeches for Bill Clinton. He's currently editor-in-chief of The Washington Monthly. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Welcome back.
Thanks to be here.
Peter Robinson was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan and joins us from the campus at Stanford University, where he's a research fellow at the Hoover Institution. Peter, nice to have you back on the program.
A pleasure.
And Paul Glastris, what's the most important thing for tomorrow night's speech?
Bill, well, the most important thing for tomorrow night is for President Obama to weave the substantial achievements of the first 4 years into a picture for the public so that they know what he's done, remind them what he's done, and leverage that into a vision of what's to come. We hear that he's going to be more specific about a second-term agenda. I'm hoping he will. It's got to be rooted, though, in what he's already done.
So as opposed to what the Republicans say, he can't run on his record, you say he must embrace his record.
That's right. And I think we began to see that in the last couple of days of the convention speeches. And also, if you've been following President Obama's speeches on the road, especially, I guess it was last night with Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, had a wonderful, powerful litany of everything from the auto bailouts to Osama bin Laden. There's a lot there to work with. The man Obama has, in sheer legislative tonnage, done more than any president since LBJ, really. Not everyone will agree that it was what should have been done, but nevertheless, he moved a lot of policy, and he needs to show that that is the basis of something better.
Peter Robinson, what's the most important thing for you that President Obama needs to get done tomorrow night?
If President Obama's writers are listening to Paul and making notes, I will be a happy man. Paul and I think I can get Ken Rudin to agree on this. Paul and I would be pretty good for democracy if our respective candidates just listened to us. In other words, Paul's saying let the man run on his record and outline a substantive policy vision for the future. That's just what candidates should do. They should be honest with the American people about what they've done and what they intend to do. I would have liked Romney to have been heavier on policy myself. I'll even throw in a little critique of my own candidate. If I may ask a question without sounding partisan, I'm baffled in that when you go to a convention, ordinarily there's some policy predicate laid down. And, Ken, you were just interviewing Howard Dean a moment ago, and you said, well, what about the future? And Howard Dean said, we're out of Iraq, but that's already happened. He mentioned Obamacare. That's already happened. And then he mentioned energy policy, which is a relatively small part of the economy because prices are already dropping because of natural gas. Even the former chairman of the DNC wasn't able to go, click, 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 here's where the president stands, here's what he wants to do. In other words, if he is substantive in a policy way tomorrow, and I hope he is, I think it'll come as something of a departure. Honestly, I'd love to hear how Paul addresses that.
Paul?
Well, I think, remember, part of what he needs to do in the next 4 years is defend and expand upon what he's already done. So we have the largest domestic policy change in decades with the Affordable Care Act. There are things in that act that need to be husbanded and grown to help control health care costs. I hope that he's able to both talk about that achievement and say, all right, we've done this. I need to be reelected in part to defend it, because if I'm not, Mitt Romney has vowed to uproot it and throw it away. But we need to move beyond that.
Ken?
My theory has always been that if this is a referendum on Barack Obama last 4 years, that's going to be a tough road for him to get reelected. But if he sets it off as the differences between what I'm offering and what the Republicans are offering, that's his real chance for another term. So I suspect to see less about his vision, unfortunately for Peter, less about his vision and more about the deficiencies of Mitt Romney. But Peter, let me just ask you a quick question about role of former presidents. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of focus on what Bill Clinton has to say tonight. And the Republicans basically have gone to Ronald Reagan, who was deceased 8 years, for their inspiration. But Bill Clinton seems to be more of an inspiration, and he's still around for the Democrats than anybody else on the political stage.
Yeah, to me, Clinton, and here I can speak with genuine, unfeigned admiration, even though I disagree in a policy sense, of course, as a conservative and a Republican. But Clinton has a way of bringing history forward into the present. Part of it is because he's a Southerner. Part of it is because he has, frankly, some of the same twinkle as FDR. But when you hear Bill Clinton talk about the Democratic Party, you feel, even I feel, that I'm being reminded of the great themes of the party of the working man, beginning with Franklin Roosevelt 70 years ago, and all the work that this party has done for little people in all the decades since. It's a very impressive performance because it's elevating. It roots the present moment in decades of American history.
We gave you another number earlier in the program. Forget it. The good line is back up. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Paul Glasser, so you wrote for Bill Clinton. What do you expect to hear from him tonight?
Well, I think Bill Clinton is far and away the best policy substance speaker, certainly in our lifetimes. And my guess is that what Bill Clinton's going to try to achieve is to explicate the policies that Mitt Romney didn't talk about that Peter referenced. You know, you could have watched that entire Republican convention and really not known what the agenda of the Republican Party is, other than they're for smaller government and a woman sort of the right to life, and so very vague things. He's going to go directly to explicating what the party platform is, what Mitt Romney's signed on to, what the Paul Ryan budget is, how they're going to voucherize Medicare, et cetera, et cetera. He's going to explain it in a way that it's never been explained. And to your point, Ken, he is going to set up that choice for Barack Obama. So it's very, very clear what the choice in this election is.
What do you want to hear?
I'd subscribe to that entire analysis, substituting explicate, substituting mischaracterized for explicate. Other than that, I'm with you, Paul.
800-989-8255. We're going to get back to what do you want to hear from President Obama tomorrow night. And we're going to start, and let's hope this works. Amy, are you on the line with us from Detroit?
Yeah, this is me.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, so I care a lot about a lot of the issues that have come up. I recently got a PhD. I have tons of student loan debt. I care a lot about women's issues. I'm gay, so I appreciate the Democrats' nod to gay rights. But I just want a job. So really, more than anything, all I want to know is how Obama is going to help me get a job.
And that boils it right down to the nub. That, Paul Glasser, is what this election is about, no?
That sure is. And look, neither candidate really has a very good answer to how the caller can get a job tomorrow. That's the difficulty here. There's things that can be done for long-term economic growth. There's some things that can be done short-term. But I think that's the heavy lift for both Obama and Romney.
But what about the critique? We gave the president 4 years. He failed. Give the new guy a chance.
Well, I think what you heard from Michelle Obama, you may hear also from Barack Obama, which is this is hard work. Progress has been made. The metaphor of the progress in America is not a sprint, it's a relay. We're making sacrifices for future prosperity. I think there's going to be a recognition that a turnaround is not right around the corner, but the ground is being laid for that and good things are happening.
Thanks very much for the call, Amy, and we wish you the best of luck in your job hunt.
Thank you.
Here's an email we have from Chris in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. I want to hear some passion from the president. I want him to take to heart Deval Patrick's call to get a backbone stand on a proud Democratic record. There's one vote for the Glastris camp there. This is Joe in Minneapolis. I'd like to see Obama reach out to the political center and seriously unveil a plan to address the budget issues facing the U.S. government. He needs to express more than the usual raise taxes on the rich Democratic rhetoric, because simply raising taxes is not going to be enough. He needs to fight Paul Ryan's scary but realistic budget proposal with a realistic budget proposal of his own. Something based on Simpson-Bowles Commission would be ideal. That would be the best thing for this campaign, actual focus on critical issues, not the evasive vagueness we've seen from both sides of the aisle for far too long now. And I guess that's a vote for Peter Robinson's plan, specifics on that. Peter, in what way is an incumbent's acceptance speech different from a first-timer?
Oh, gee. Well, you know, I think back to my experience in 1984, the economy had turned around, inflation was down to low single digits. The slogan "Morning Again in America" actually made sense. It resonated with people's experience. So Ronald Reagan was able to go to the convention and say it worked. And in other words, the point is that the incumbent simply has to address his record, what he did and what has happened over the last 4 years. And for this is the piece of it that I can't quite, I know that I can hear enthusiasm in Paul's voice, and I can't quite see it, because hope and change is now being replaced with groan and slog. It could be even worse. That's just a harder speech to give.
We're talking with former presidential speechwriters Peter Robinson. As he mentioned, he wrote for Ronald Reagan. Paul Glastris wrote for Bill Clinton. He's with us here in Studio 3A. So is political junkie Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Maria on the line with us from Camp Hill in Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir. I've always been an independent and voted according to who the man is. But because I'm a Latina woman, I have run to the Democratic Party. I don't walk anymore. I run to it. I am concerned because they are so anti-immigration, and I am an advocate for the undocumented. And I am thrilled that Obama has worked on this policy for the DREAM Act for children. And because I work with the undocumented, it affects the children that I have worked with for the last 10 years, and they are thrilled. They have now the ability to join the military. They're going to be able to vote maybe one day. But it's been a huge improvement on immigration. And I am Mexican-American, and we are the largest minority in this nation. And what we think and what we, and we may not be illegal, but someone in our family typically is. Someone in almost every Mexican family has an undocumented person living in the United States.
All right. Thanks very much. Peter Robinson, as you look at the demographics, as we look mm-hmm. ahead, well, she's right. This is the fastest growing minority group. It's the largest minority group. And while Republicans say Barack Obama did not keep his promise on immigration reform, as she says, look at the polls, most Latinos run to the Democrats.
Yeah, they do. And here I sit in California, so I'm aware of it from that point of view. And I happen to be married to a Cuban, so my kids are being raised as bilingual. So I'm pretty acutely aware of this. The argument that we need to enforce the rule of law at the border while welcoming immigrants who come to this country just turns out to be really hard to make.
Ken?
Peter, but when you think of
Ken, come in and save me, will you please? I can't find my own out on that one.
But here's the thing. I mean, Mitt Romney has been accused of so many flip-flops, so-called flip-flops, over the last couple of years, and you heard the kind of harsh rhetoric he had about immigration and immigrants during the primaries. How does he soften that view without being accused of a further flip-flop?
There's a
Peter,
little.
I couldn't rescue. I'm sorry, I couldn't rescue.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
at all.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I'm going to go hub to hub to hub to. And if there's a silence that's too long, Paul will step in here. But if you study, look, I agree. And in my judgment, Romney made a terrible mistake on policy, but also a political mistake, by trying to position himself to the right of Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, who actually deals with immigration day in and day out, and understands that you have to welcome folks into society. You have to give them educational opportunities. Romney got himself to the right of that. Nevertheless, if you read through his proposals, there has always been an openness toward some kind of path to citizenship, a greater welcomeness than his position is being mischaracterized as being. Still, I grant, it's hard.
And it's worth remembering that he won the primary by going to Rick. He kind of eliminated Rick Perry as a foe.
Well, and then, Rick Perry eliminated Rick Perry.
Exactly. Rick Perry helped a lot.
He sure did. But he also did that to Newt Gingrich. And it's not clear he would have been the nominee had he not gone to the right. That was the dilemma that he found himself in through the entire primary.
Yeah, there were three reasons why Rick Perry failed. I'm sorry, I could only think of two. Sorry.
All right, here's an email from Nuri.
Ken, stop being wicked.
Nuri in Houston. In a very down-to-earth tone, speak about his promises he made last time, which ones he fulfilled and which ones he did not, and why. Might that not be a useful rhetorical approach, Paul Glasters?
I think it might a nod in that direction. I think probably in the limited period of time you have, talking about what you tried to do and didn't succeed at, I'm not sure there's a lot of upside to that because he got so much done. I mean, there's just endless numbers of things to talk about that, again, as I said, they lay the predicate for the future on education, on energy, on controlling healthcare costs, which is at the heart of controlling our fiscal problems. So I think there's plenty there to build on.
Peter, go ahead.
I'd just like to ask Paul a question, which has the benefit of being a genuine question. This isn't tendentious at all. I just can't figure it out. We know there's a limited number of states that are in play, and we know that within those states there's a very small number as a percentage of undecided voters. In this nation of more than 300 million, it may be something under a million voters who decide the outcome of the election. They're undecided because they've watched 4 years of Barack. They're undecided in part because they can't warm to Mitt Romney. But the other half is they're undecided because after 4 years of Barack Obama watching this cascade of legislation, they still just don't buy it. Paul, what does the president say to that 900,000 voters who will decide the election, to them who don't buy it?
And what does he say in 12 seconds?
I think they know a lot has been done, and I think it doesn't behoove him to not talk about it, but I think they understand he inherited a mess, and I don't think they're necessarily believing the whole thing was a failure. They'd like to see more, though.
Paul Glastris of the Washington Monthly with us here in Studio 3A. Peter Robinson of the Hoover Institution with us from Stanford University. Thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it. We'll have you back.
Great.
And Ken Rudin, our political junkie, he'll be back anyway Wednesday.
I'm so sorry.